becomes a man. I didn't understand that part of the racial slurs were calling black people boy. That's a northern thing, guys. And don't you think for one moment that racism is confined to the South. That's pure garbage. Back in the...
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up for another Sunday night. It's, what is it? It's about 4 minutes past the hour there, of 9 p.m. in the eastern U.S.
sometime in L.A., right, Tim? Or it's Monday morning over here in Australia. Always one step ahead of y'all. But we're gonna do a bunch of music and some other stuff today. But I've been obsessing over the past few days because I just feel like is 2009 gonna be some sort of flashback to 1992? I feel that John's going to just go off on a complete and utter bizarro music tangent here. I feel like something in the musical universe is going to be corrected in about a week. Now, you know, back in the 90s, we had the whole Seattle grunge thing. And kind of the one of the few bands to last out of all of that was Pearl Jam, who have continued to consistently make great music and have become the elder statesmen. And, you know, there was, you know, Nirvana, and, you know, Kurt had to blow his head off, and, you know, there have been various other tragedies and whatnot that have, you know, eaten up most of the bands of that era. Now, very possibly the most in some ways tortured band of that era was Alice in Chains, who, for those who are fans, and I am one, to follow Alice in Chains' career, especially to pay attention to the music lyrically, you rode this roller coaster ride of four guys where one's a complete and utter smack fiend. Watching a good friend destroy himself and have that friend also write about how he was self-destructing, and it seemed like there was nothing anybody could do to stop it. And, you know, they kind of stopped touring back in 1996. The extended not talked about hiatus, and finally in 2002, the drugs took Layne Staley away. His pain was finally ended. And you have a band who probably more than any other band out of that time probably made more of a difference to future music than Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, than Nirvana. They just got cut off. And it's always felt like, to me, they never got to run their course. Well, in about 8 days, the first studio album from Alice in Chains in 14 years is going to be released. And I think that they've done this as right as you can do this kind of thing. Because I'll tell you, you know, just like anything, you know, I mean, I consider it a different situation, but imagine if after Kurt Cobain died, you know, within 2 years, the remaining members of Nirvana decide to get another singer and put Nirvana back on the road. This is a different situation, I believe. However, it's starting the same bloody debate, and this and I find this an interesting debate that when it comes up, you know, should bands who lose founding members continue on as the entity that they were? And I don't think that there's a hard and fast answer to that question. I think it depends on the particular band. But I'm going to get that. They've been leaking, not leaking, but, you know, releasing some teaser stuff for this record. Now, you know, this has been the flip side. You know, here's a band that, like, did nothing for ages. And, you know, you remember that tsunami, you know, a few years back? Remember there was all over the world, you know, different countries and groups of artists put on benefit concerts. And there was a big one in the United States that I didn't realize until recently was the brainchild of actually Sean Kinney, the drummer from Alice in Chains. And so he rings up the remaining boys and says, hey, you know, I want to do this thing. I want to get as many of our friends together. Look, let's play the tunes. And they played the tunes with a friend of the guitarist's singing, and then various guests. But the response was really huge. It seemed as though out there in the greater public, people wanted to hear this band. And so they do a few club gigs. And before they know it, they're off on all these festival tours playing in front of 100,000 people. No album in 14 years. No album in the works yet. Not even talking about putting it back together, but having fun playing. Well, they start writing. And they end up, long story short, going to the Foo Fighters studio. And without a label, completely self-produced, just decided to see what would happen. And I heard rumors about this starting about a year and a half ago. And I didn't talk about it because I was very skeptical. I think I've been converted. Now, you know, and I'm going to get to the Pearl Jam album as well, because that seems to be getting reviews of the best thing that they've done in maybe a decade, and very reminiscent of 10, and it's very rock, it's very, it sounds awesome. So, you know, and one of the things that there's something about so far what I've heard off of this record called Black Gives Way to Blue, is that it throws back to the pre-computer production times, I think. This is a band in a room. No click tracks, no machines, band in a room. Let's layer a bunch of guitars, band in a room. So, I think I should go to the first... they've got this single out at the moment called Check My Brain, which is just absolute FM radio ear candy. However, they first, as I follow the press, they first released a clip for a track called Inside View. And I thought this was a statement that a band doesn't release anything for 14 years. And in this modern era of corporatized FM rock radio, or everything radio, where a song 4 minutes long is pushing the envelope, rock radio was playing this track, which is over 7 minutes long in its entirety. That, to me, is saying something. But then they released Check My Brain. And Check My Brain goes within 2 weeks straight to number one on Billboard. This is a band without a label. This is a band doing it very much the old way. And the new singer, William Duvall, who I think does a great job in handling what Lane used to do, but slotting right into a band that had a sound. And he seems to fit right into it. And, I think there's a lot to be said for taking one's time. And they've been doing some interesting press, because I think they know that they're going to come up against a whole bunch of people that are really, really just wanting to hear a particular noise again. And Alice in Chains had a particular sound that they made. And then those that were just really into the myth of Lane Staley, the old singer, you know, I mean, we're talking, you know, kind of in a smaller sense, but, you know, some of that, he has some of that mystical quality out there, kind of in the way of a John Lennon to some people. And, I mean, the guy opened up a vein in every song that he performed, and it could be ugly, it could be painful, it could be everything, but what it was always honest. So, I'm going to play this first single that's out and at number one at the moment, and, you know, I listen to it with a super critical ear, and I go, oh, that's kind of like a bit of a lightweight Alice in Chains song. However, they said it was the no-brainer single, and I understand why. Because it has everything that Alice in Chains was, and so it's kind of like, you know, FM radio friendly. Hi, remember this? And hearing a Seattle band singing a song about California, if you listen really close, it's actually about Jerry. You know, this is a you know, guys that come from, you know, the Northwest. They ended up doing this record in L.A. and Jerry hates L.A. And this song is all about having to relocate to California to do this thing. And that's why it's like, you know, California's all right. Somebody check my brain. Without further ado, I think what possibly could be the unexpected biggest album of the year. Off Black Gives Way to Blue, the opening single, Check My Brain. And we'll talk about this weird guitar noise in a minute.
So
That is a song, a sound I have long missed. I can't even tell you. You know, I am such a music geek, as hopefully you all know, having listened to this program for a while. But, like, this in particular, like, those of you that have been listening for a while, you know that I go kind of a bit stupid when a new Tool album comes out, because, you know, it takes, like, 5 years. Well, this is one I never expected to see. I never expected to see this band ever see the light of day again. And it seems like it's all been done for all the right reasons. And you know, this is a great example of things you can't do with a computer. The beginning of that song, that verse thing, there are three notes played on two frets, and it's just bending the crap out of everything. Bass, two guitars. And rumor has it that recording this song, the bass player's fingers turned to hamburger by the end of it, just because, and Jerry refers to it as his drunk driving sound, car sick sound. And to get into this, see, this is one of those bands that I have a bit of a thing for. And one of them is vocal arrangements. You know, they've always had a thing for not just always just a primary, you know, frontman vocalist, but, like, you know, dual vocal stuff. And before I play the other track, new track off the album, I'll play something going back a little bit. And to me, you know, when I first heard Check My Brain, it was kind of as though it was just sounded like it was the next album to come out after the Three-Legged Dog record, which is the self-titled one. It just sounded like, it actually sounds like it should be the album after Dirt, which was the second one. Because their final record, Lane was already becoming more and more erratic and less dependable. So you can actually hear Jerry Cantrell, the guitar player, picking up more and more of the vocals as time went on. But it was just, you know, there was... It's one of those great things where the music told the story of a journey of four people. And I think that they're just going to continue on with that. But I'm just trying to pick one to go to, for the uninitiated. Go back a little bit. Here's and I can't believe I don't think I've ever given this one to Bob. This should be in his prayer meeting playlist pack, off of the self-titled album in 1995. This is, with the original singer, Lane Staley, a track called God Am. You know, two words, God and Am. And I like the play. I like the play on word stuff in this. But give you an idea, it's like, doesn't sound like it's like they've diverged too far from where they were. This could be the beginning of an interesting second chapter for a band. Anyway, God Am.
You in my heart then, when
See, you know, it's those tight intertwined vocal harmonies and harmonies not being over the top but coming underneath. And for those of you that may have seen, and if you haven't seen it, I suggest checking it out sometime. The Shut Up and Sing documentary about the Dixie Chicks making the record after all the, you know, We're Embarrassed Bushes from Texas routine. And there's a moment where the three ladies go to have a meeting with Rick Rubin, who is producing the record. And I don't recall her name at the moment, but the fiddle player was kind of, you know, venting a little bit on where she thought she stood in the record, saying, you know, I really like the songs and everything, but I'm not hearing where a fiddle comes in, and I don't want to be putting in fiddle parts just to say that we put down fiddle parts. And Rick has this great response where he says something to the effect of, he said, look, just don't worry about that right now. Right now we're just creating the good songs. We will then find what makes the Dixie Chicks filter. And, you know, this isn't like just a particular piece of equipment or something, but it's finding those things that make them sound like what they are or who they are. And I think, you know, Queen is a band. They had a filter. They had that fingerprint, that thumbprint that was just undeniable. Over the weekend, the Glenn Miller Story, the film, was on. It's a great film. It's a classic, and the audio and the music and everything is just brilliant. And there, you know, I mean, it's that thing throughout time, musicians have had this quest for the sound, right? That thing that they hear in their head and trying to make it so other people can hear that thing that you hear in your head, you know, and you know, you can kind of name those bands that, and it's not even bands, but just like artists over time that you know, you can tell who they are. You know, in other bands in rock, you know, it was Van Halen. Whether it was guitar, keyboards, the second the drums and bass kicked in, you just went, "Oh, that's Van Halen." The Guitar Dust record, that Saul Williams record that's produced by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. There's certain bits in that music where you just go, that's obviously Trent Reznor. You know, you can just tell. Not even singing, but you can tell, you know, that intangible thing, that thing that makes your brain say, I have never even heard this song before, but I know who that is. So, now I want to play the other track that they've released, and I suggest going to AliceInChains.com and actually checking out the video for this clip. It's really good. I reckon it's not aired on MTV because it shows a bit of nipple. I get the impression, again, you know, like Alice in Chains have always done, and it wasn't necessarily just Layne Staley because of Layne Staley's problems, but they were always a very inward-looking band lyrically. You know, the darker corners of the soul, addiction, pain, love, rejection. And this track seems to be about judging oneself too harshly, possibly. And the clip definitely gives that impression. But this is the 7-minute track that was getting high rotation on American FM radio. And I mean, like, they'd have to, like, seriously mess with the system to play a song 7 minutes long. You know, that's getting in the way of an advertising break. So, and I reckon Virgin EMI's just got to be just rubbing their little hands together going, woo-hoo-hoo, we didn't have to pay nothing for this. Woo-wee! You know, remember, this whole album was produced by the band just to see if it would go. They were ready to pull the plug at any time. If it didn't feel like it was the right thing to do, it was off. But they felt like it was on. I think they got it right. But here we go. The other leaked single, and unfortunately, I wish I had a better copy. I'm playing this off of the MySpace page. But A Looking in View off Black Gives Way to Blue. Out September 29th. Alice in Chains. Reborn. I think they might be on to a good one here. Now, we're going to do some other music today because there's, I mean, our friend David Rovics has 21 new songs out, and we're going to get to some of that. We're going to get to the Pearl Jam. We're going to get to that. I'm kind of excited about what's, it seems like there's some cool things happening musically on the planet at the moment. Now, probably the thing that, aside from the fact that this album, this Alice in Chains album is happening at all, that probably is causing the most kerfuffle, is the fact that Elton John makes an appearance on this record. And over at the Rolling Stone, they were one of the first to report it, about Elton John singing on the title track, Black Gives Way to Blue. The title track on the Alice in Chains album is a tribute to the band's late frontman, Lane Staley, who died in 2002 from a lethal speedball. And the collaboration was born when singer-guitarist Jerry Cantrell thought the track could use a little piano. When a pal suggested Cantrell ring up Sir Elton John, I remember laughing, saying, yeah, I'll get right on that, Cantrell says in a statement. But I decided it was worth trying and wrote Elton an email explaining what the song means to us and that it's a real, raw, open-hearted song for Lane. The band sent John the track and were blown away when he quickly responded saying he was in. Elton John is a huge influence on me as a songwriter, and having him on that song was an amazing honor for us. Now, they haven't released this yet, and I've heard, and there's if you check on YouTube and you're curious, it's a beautiful song. There's an acoustic performance caught on somebody's iPhone. That's actually not a bad little phone film, and it gives you a damn good idea what the song's about. In a promotional video that I was checking out, Jerry Cantrell was saying that when he was recording the vocal for that song, and after he finished it, he got super sick, got hit with this migraine thing for like 3 weeks, all kinds of doctors, you know, Spinal Tap and all this other stuff, and it ended up just being that, you know, he was processing this huge ball of grief that he hadn't digested yet, and, you know, the song is actually about saying goodbye to an old friend and trying to figure out what to do with the rest of your life, which I think is an interesting... For people that tell artists that they shouldn't go on after something like this, I think it's really selfish. Especially in this kind of situation. So I say more power to him. I'm looking forward to it, and there will be a full album review. I haven't done one of those in a while. I'll probably do one of those for that in Pearl Jam when those albums come out, so probably about 2 weeks away. So to wrap out, and see, and you know, Alice got put into the whole grunge thing, and Jerry Cantrell, you know, quietly kind of cringes when you call what they do grunge. He likes to think it's much more metal. It's just Alice in Chains. That's what it is. And one of the things that made them reach a wider audience was that they could play, for one. And two, and I think this is always a sign of whether you've written a good song. If you can strip it down to an acoustic guitar and a vocal and it still works, you've written a good song. And back in 96, what was actually Lane's last gig with Alice in Chains, as far as I know, they did an MTV Unplugged. Remember when those things were going on? Those things still go on? This is huge. And it's interesting. If you listen to this album in its entirety, you can kind of hear the audience knows that they might not see Lane again. You know, it was becoming, you know, pretty apparent that the guy was in a bad way. So off of that, why don't we go here? No excuses. This is a great song that showcases what a really great drummer Sean Kinney is. See, these guys are my musical peers. They're all, like, right on 40. So these guys grew up in the same musical window as myself. These guys were musical peers of mine when, back in the 90s, I was bashing it out with Truck in Texas. And Sean Kinney is a drummer's drummer to me. He's great. Yeah, he's a big, loud metal drummer, but he plays much more like a session drummer in many ways. He studied the great jazz players and fusion players, I have no doubt. But this is a track that I always used to love playing, firing up PAs around non-metal type musicians. And most drummers would be like, hey, who the hell is that? Because they just hear these drums and say, wow, that's really cool. And it's a very fusion-y kind of deal. But anyway, off of 1996, the Unplugged album, Alice in Chains, No Excuses.
It's all right. There comes a
enthusiastic crowd you got there, boys. So we're going to, when we come back, we're going to go to a break here in a little bit. And I'll wrap up my whole Alice in Chains thing here for now. everyone's going like, what? Oh, he's going like nuts. But I have to get this out of my system. but I just mark my words. This is going to be the biggest rock album of the year. And it's not going to be anything that any of the record labels planned on. And I love it. So, and I got some other stuff to get on to. I also going to play you some stuff from a local band here in Sydney called Swivelhead, a project put together by a friend of mine. It's been going for a couple of years now, and I've just recently been talking to him, and sounding pretty good. I like what they got going, and we'll hit on the and we're going to hit on some of the. We're going to hit on some of the new David Rovick stuff, too, because we finally have some real studio versions of some stuff that he sent this show in demo form, which was such an honor to get. So we've got some real versions of Pirates of Somalia and In the Name of God coming, and there's a great track on there. I just only had a chance myself to even click through a couple. The email just came out yesterday or today. There's a great track on there called Travel Lodge. anyone who does as many gigs traveling as Dave Rovick does eventually will have to write some sort of a hotel song. And you're just gonna have to deal with that. But just hit on some classic Alice to wrap out the hour, and then when we come back we'll do a bit of Pearl Jam and do the Swivelhead thing. And I also want to anyone else been catching on to this Radigan guy on MSNBC? The morning meeting guy? I've been starting to catch some clips of him. He's all right. This is another one of those MSNBC kind of quietly start something things, and I'm going to play some audio with him and that birther nut job, Orly Tates, and he shows you how it's done. And we'll talk about Obama's media blitz that he's doing at the moment over health care and some other things, you know, before we get out of here. But there's a lot of things happening in the world of rock, and so we're going to play in that world. And here's the track that kicked it all off for the band in 1990, a song that I know that made a whole bunch of Christians get upset. Man in the Box, off of Facelift. Alice in Chains. Do riffs get any simpler? Come on. perhaps we're going to wrap up this first hour of Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll come back and we'll do some Swivel Head. We'll do some Pearl Jam. We'll do some David Rovix. And we might actually do some news. So stick around. And we might even get the phone lines opened up at some stage in the proceedings. Or the Skype line. Sorry. Phone's still down. What are you going to do? You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
It's hour two, getting all foxed up. And now, back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
Nobody knows you. Nobody even knows your name. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Now, here... We'll take a little pause on the music here for a moment. Which direction to go? So, I'm having a bit of a scan around, and on the net today, and I see another clip being credited to this Radigan guy who's got a show that's been running a few weeks on MSNBC. And I don't know what this guy's background is, but he seems like he's a pretty sharp character. But, you know, we talk about often on this network, Bob talks about it a lot, and David from Maine talks about this a lot, that we shouldn't be giving, we shouldn't talk about things like the birthers and whatnot, because it just gives them airtime. And I definitely agree with that sentiment in many ways. However, I think sometimes you can have these people on and deal with them. And I think if we just had a handful more of the talking head types out there, handle crazies like they're crazies, because I mean, this is where we fall down this hole of artificial, meaningless balance. You know, balance has come to mean that, you know, you have to have a pro and anti on everything, but yet no one actually says, yeah, but they're crazy. That's wrong. That's a lie. Sparky's telling me, Radigan comes from CNBC. Like I said, I knew nothing about him. Seems like he's, I don't know. I've liked his style from a couple of spots that I've seen recently. But here he takes on Orly Tates after she and her mob basically got slapped by a judge saying, you know, stop wasting people's time. You know, here, this is these lawsuits trying to claim that Barack Obama is not a U.S. citizen or just a joke. Stop wasting the court's time. Here's a $10,000 fine. And I'm going to play this thing in its entirety. I might stop in the middle, but I really think he handles this well. So, you know, the rest of the talking heads out there, you know, we want to bury this thing, make it go away. This is how you make it go away.
Dealt a blow here, another lawsuit claiming that the president was not born in America, tossed out of court. Alex Witt getting us up to speed.
Okay, here's how it played out, Dylan. In Georgia, a federal judge called the latest so-called birther case frivolous and said it presented no credible evidence. In this suit, Army Dr. Connie Rhodes hoped to prevent being sent to Iraq by questioning President Obama's eligibility to be commander-in-chief. Now, she claimed it made her deployment order unconstitutional. Lawyer and de facto leader of the birther movement, Orly Tates, represented the Army doctor. Tates has filed several unsuccessful lawsuits around the country challenging Obama's qualifications, and this time the judge threatened her with sanctions if she shows up in his courtroom again.
Right,
that's how it stands.
Thank you very much, Alex. And with us now, Attorney Orly Tates, live from California. Ms. Tates, what's your plan from here?
Well, you know, I wish for once you people would give truthful information.
Okay, I have to pause it once. I've watched this woman on telly a few times. I have never, ever seen her actually respond to a question she's been asked when it's asked. I mean, I find that you can look back at almost any footage of her. She gets asked any kind of question, and it's, you know, push the question to the side, get on the soapbox, and preach. Check it out.
Which people are you referring to? Which are you referring to, me when you say that, or which people are you referring to when you say you people?
Both of you, you and your co-host.
Since I'm the only person here, you want to debate information, well, I want you to talk to me. So tell me what I've said that was wrong.
Okay, you have, the only thing that you stated, that one case was dismissed. You didn't tell your listeners that Judge David O'Carter in California stated this is a valid case. It is going to trial on the merits. The date for trial is set for January the 26th. And it's in Central District of California, Santa Ana Division, Judge David O. Carter, 411 West 4th Street. We have a hearing on October the 5th.
Now, I don't know if you've seen this clip, but during this whole section, she's kind of half smiling and looking off camera. She's obviously got someone there that's either prompting her or, giving her signals on whether she's, you know, sticking with the line, or, you know, maybe her attorney's there making sure she doesn't step over it.
We have free trial January 11th, and we have trial January 26th,
right,
where Barack Hussein Obama will need to show up in court and show...
Now, this is the first I've ever heard about this case, supposedly, that Obama's got to show up in a California court with his birth certificate. And the other, you know, why don't, you know, they one of the things that they keep asking for is the long form birth certificate. I can't get the long form of my birth certificate. Most of you can't either. That's not, you know, that aspect of this thing has not been squashed enough. You know, the long form has all kinds of extra information that is with the hospital. It's the short form, you know. I mean, I've had to get replacement birth certificates plenty of times with all my things with immigration, whatnot, identification. And what you get from the state of New Jersey is a short form. And that's what anyone gets when having to come up with proof of, you know, I mean, I know I'm giving her more time, but we're getting there. Because Rattigan just absolutely... Because I've never heard of this case. I don't know if it exists or not. But note, she will not respond to what she's being asked and then just goes on the attack. This is the classic tactic of someone who's not actually there to debate the issues, but to just hammer down some sort of... I don't know. Ideology or something.
All of his information proving to my clients, 48 plaintiffs, right, high-ranked members
Understood.
Of U.S. military, and 10 state representatives, and Ambassador
yeah.
Keys, by what right is he sitting in the White
Understood.
House?
Understood. So,
this
Orly,
is a
Orly,
major
hang on, Orly,
victory.
Orly,
it never
Orly,
happened.
Orly, this is
and
not a monologue,
Orly.
Orly. This is not a monologue. Now, I will let you answer, but you will let me ask you questions, or you will not come on this show, okay?
Okay.
All right. So here we go.
That's a real threat.
Now, this is a new plan. I talk and then you talk. You don't just come on TV and talk. And I won't do it either. Now, the first judge said, you are basically wasting people's time. Why do you think it is that the one judge to the case that you're pushing forward with, which I think is quite interesting, what do you think that the judge that's dismissing you is dismissing you for, and why do you think the other judge is indulging the prosecution, or I shouldn't even use the word indulging because that implies a bias from me, but is allowing you to proceed with that prosecution? What's the difference in the judges?
Because the judge in California, David O. Carter, is a former Marine. He really believes in the Constitution. And the judge
so
in
hold on,
Georgia...
So let's stop there, though. So what is it in the Constitution that you cite that you believe allows you to continue to file lawsuits prosecuting the President of the United States for not having been born here when this has been reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and
So I love this. You know, she drops the he lost the Constitution, and automatically Rattigan's just like, so, okay, what about the Constitution is this, you know, impacting? Okay, you know, you just because you wave that flag doesn't give you any kind of, superiority or sway in the conversation. It's nothing.
Reviewed and reviewed, and all the evidence continues to show that he was born here. In other words, at what point do you think to yourself, hang on, I'm either acting as a political operative or I'm quite simply just wasting my time. Even if you believe it, maybe if you go to the beach or do something else. In other words, there's a point where either you're just acting out of political interests or you're wasting your days.
I mean, how can you lie to your viewers like this?
Also, where's my lie? No, let's stop.
Yeah, okay.
Where's
sure.
my lie?
Okay. Nobody in this country, not one single person, has ever seen a hospital birth certificate that would show the name of the hospital, name of attending physician, any signatures. Nobody. You have not
right.
seen
See, now,
this.
The thing is, the genius thing about people like you is that you like to accuse others of being liars as a way to cut a boulevard so that you can just blather on a bunch of lies. Now, Orly, I appreciate
you
attempting the conversation.
Show
I appreciate
you
attempting
the
conversation. I think that I admire your passion, and I'm hopeful that after you're done with the birthers, that maybe you can direct it towards helping us restore free and fair competition for everybody in America, and not just play political spitball fighting. Orly, thank you so much.
Oh,
That whole bit, Radigan at the end there, that's just a thing of beauty. Instead of, you know, firing spitballs, you know, maybe you should go to the beach. That's how you handle these idiots. Now, let's talk about more idiots and how they're being manipulated. You probably heard about this. Media Matters got some video footage of Fox News talking heads actually, you know, pumping up the 9/12 crowds. I mean, this it should be the final nail in the coffin when it comes to proving that Fox is nothing but a propaganda arm. Okay? At the 9/12 event in D.C. last weekend, they actually have footage of, that really, really geeky, dude from Fox with the, you know, looks like he's trying to be the nerdy Clark, a nerdier Clark Kent. And off camera, he's actually preaching at the crowd. That's not reporting. Okay, here we go. Musical theater on radio. Here's this guy, and I'll catch his name. See, he means so little to me, I can never remember his name, and I've seen him 1,000 times. Here's him actually reporting, supposedly reporting on air.
That you're getting from these people, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, these people
That's
are
Glenn
just,
Head.
You know, that it's AstroTurf, et cetera, et cetera. Who are these people?
Glenn, they're old, they're young, they're black, they're white, they're male, they're female.
Griff Jenkins.
They're farmers, they're miners, they're doctors, they're stay-at-home moms, they're nurses. And they are, for the most part, coming out for the first time in their lives to have their voices heard. This is, as best I can describe it, a absolute grassroots.
So that's him acting like a reporter. Now, hopefully this will come over. Here's the video that Media Matters got their hands on. And this is the same guy with his microphone through the PA off camera.
That we owe to each of others to renew that vow, to renew that pledge that was given by a unique and special group of Americans so long ago. Let us renew that pledge.
He's up there preaching. Glenn Beck's little, you know, 9 pricks and 12 participles of whatever. And, I mean, this isn't blurring the lines at all anymore. I mean, this is propaganda. Pure, plain and simple. When, you know, it would be, could you imagine if MSNBC had paid for a stage set up at one of the anti-war protests and bloody Keith Olbermann was up on the stage, you know, when he's supposedly not on air, sitting there going, you know, Bush is a murderer and the war is illegal and all that, and everybody get, you know, and riling them up. I mean, because that's the equivalent. And if that had happened, no matter how anti-war I was, if I saw that during the anti-war protests, I would have been screaming bloody murder at Keith Olbermann. But, I mean, these people have absolutely no credibility. It's a fucking joke. And so we need to handle these people just like Radigan handled that Orly Tates. I mean, she actually has a license to practice law. I'm surprised she can have a license to drive. There's something not right with that woman. She's weird. I don't know how else to put it. She's just weird. But on this, from the Daily Kos, Jed Lewison wrote, although this video provides a clear-cut example of Fox propaganda in action, the only thing truly shocking about it is it won't wake up real journalists to the fact that just about every single thing you see on Fox is manufactured. They are an infotainment channel for conservatives, not a real media outlet. And that's absolutely true. But, I mean, there's just, this is a situation where there's no other context, there's no denial here. This is a powerful media outlet manufacturing news. Now, makes one wish that there was, you know, some sort of standards bureau that you could go to. But, you know, then again, Fox in the past has won lawsuits that have said they don't even have to tell the truth in reporting because it's otherwise it's an infringement on their free speech. So are they a news outlet? Or are they the media arm of an ideological movement? I think the latter. And I see this stuff going on from here, and I've said this before, I've said this in the last few weeks. I'm really freaked out about what I'm seeing over in the States at the moment, because it really just does feel like the idiots are running the asylum. And how this small group of really vocal nutbags can drive the dialogue and drive the direction of the country in such a way. Just really blows me away. And, I don't know, maybe part of the reason why I've been doing so much more music lately, because I just find the whole thing so unbelievably frustrating. And I just sit there and think, you know, like on the healthcare debate, you know, and when you talk about this thing, you know, all these birther and deathers, blah, 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 blah. All these people who supposedly are concerned about the healthcare debate, we haven't heard any debate on healthcare. None at all. And any of the polling, whether you're polling doctors, whether you're polling the American people, it's 70 and 80% support for a public option. But yet we still, you know, if you didn't know better, which unfortunately a lot of people don't, if you didn't know better, you'd turn on the television, you'd swear that 80% of the people didn't want a public option. But see, we're back into opposite world again. And I mean, opposite world has really taken over. It is the new reality. But we... And you know, talking about the Fox thing, you know, they're so big. And so widespread that they end up impacting reality more than they should, because these manufactured realities then get picked up by other news sources and then repeat it as news. Or repeat it as the truth when they're absolute and utter just falsehoods, lies. Again, I feel like I've gone back to where Bruce Birch and I were when we first launched Fourth Estate Radio. Once again, America is going to suffer by the fact that it's not having the conversations it needs to have. The healthcare debate's a perfect one. We're supposedly having one, and it's supposedly really fiery, but I haven't heard anything about actual healthcare discussed yet. I just hear a bunch of bullshit. Weird. It's all very, very strange, unnerving times we live in. So anyway, we're going to get back to some music. All right. Do we go local? Yeah, let's go local. So I get a phone call from out of the blue last week by a friend of mine who's a drummer. His name's Clinton Hahn. And Clinton's probably easily one of my favorite drummers in this part of the world. He's a fine player. Well-rounded guy that can kind of play anything, really good jazz chops, but he's been working on a rock project the last couple of years. And I knew that he had something going on, but I hadn't followed it very closely, but he contacted me and to disclose all information, I could possibly end up having some role with this band and production wise in the future. But he rang me up and wanted me to hear what they're doing, and got a full album, self produced, really, really well done, going the complete indie route. But I think a really good band. So I don't know. What do you think? They've been actually getting some rotational play in Arizona. They're doing Europe and in Asia are starting to pick up on them. And there seems to be a bit of a rumbling about this band. Comparisons to the Tea Party, to Tool, have come up. Evanescence, obviously, with the female vocal and big guitars. I think that's just a lazy one. Like I said, one of my favorite drummers. And, you know, he said, I'm known for being a jazzer, but he says, I really do love a bit of rock. And I think they're trying to build something, trying to go for some sort of a bit of a big sound, and this track particularly caught my ear. I think that this one could do rather well on radio. And you can find them at swivelhead.com.au, or they have a MySpace page, myspace.com/swivelhead, SWIVELHEAD. So I reckon that this is a pretty cool track. Cannot Live Here, Swivelhead.
The ground.
I don't know about you, but I reckon that's a pretty interesting noise. I'm really looking forward to hearing this stuff live. So check it out. Go to swivelhead.com.au and find their MySpace page. There's a bunch of tracks there. You can check them out. And there will be more about that band. I'm playing that off the MySpace page. My copy of the album's on the way. So I'll play some more stuff when I have better quality copies of it to play. So at the moment, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick little break, and when we come back, we'll talk some Pearl Jam. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can email me, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com, or find me via Skype at Foxed Up, F-O-X-D-U-P, and we'll open up the phone lines when we come back after we do a bit of Pearl Jam, so stick around. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're doing, it seems to be a return to the days of Seattle with music. I don't know what it is this month, but anyway, we've got a new Alice in Chains album coming out on the 29th, first one in 14 years, but then there's the Stalwarts, Pearl Jam, and what is being rated as their best album in many, many years, not that they've been releasing bad ones. But Backspacer is now out, and I've only got my hands on the one track that they've got available. I will get the album here in the next week. But it really throws back to 10, if you ask me. Here's a little taste of The Fixer.
Oh, let me shed a little light on it.
telling you, it's like flashback to bloody 1992. Can't wait to hear more off of that record. And ever since Cameron from Soundgarden joined Pearl Jam on drums, they have returned back to something close to that intangible thing that was the magic of 10. There was a time there where, you know, always great, but I always felt something was missing. And I didn't actually realize till recently is that their current drummer actually played on the original demos. But that makes sense, being that they came out of Temple of the Dog and all of that. And see, the whole Seattle thing that is part of my musical history in a major way. It's what was happening when I was playing most. And, I don't know, it's just the idea. I have this vision that over the next year, there's going to be, like, parents and kids going to Alice in Chains shows. Kids who have been on the planet longer than it's been since Alice in Chains last released a record. And it'll be new for them, and it'll be new for Dad, and whatnot. And I can just see this whole kind of couple of generations off at the gigs this next summer round, all screaming, "Check My Brain" together. I think it'll be good. So we still got more music to do. Our good friend David Rovix, who was on tour here in Australia not long ago, unfortunately missed catching up with him this last run. But just got an email in my mailbox overnight that Mr. David Rovix has released 21 new songs, all downloadable for free. The CD version will be available shortly. I do recommend checking out Mr. David Rovix. Probably the greatest political kind of singer-songwriter out there. And, yes, Sparky says, like the Deadheads with the multi-generations at the gig. Yes, exactly, man. Exactly. And you know, I know it's all kind of like big rock and all that, but, hey, it's important. To me, it's important. where did the Dave page go? Okay. And if you go to today's show post, foxdup, foxdup.headonradionetwork.com, you'll find links to all this stuff where you can go and download Dave's music over at SoundClick, or you can check out davidrovix.com and all the information's there. Now, you may remember the demo version of this track, because David just written it when I had a chat with him his previous trip to Australia. And he played this song for me just acoustic there in while we were having a drink. And this is a great song. And he's finally done a studio version. He had sent us a rough version when it was first written. But here is recorded at his mate's studio. I believe it was Washington State. I'll double check. I can't remember. It was either that or in California. But it was somewhere out west there. But here, debuting on the horn, Pirates of Somalia, Mr. David Rovix.
Let me tell you the story of 100 ships traversing the great big sea, moving the riches of the world in large ships owned by the captains of industry. They were heading to places like Amsterdam, London, and L.A. But they had to change their plans a bit when they were held up on the way. Here's to the Pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the Pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a Jolly Roger to you. Harare is a town of fishermen, living lives of hardship and toil. But today they had a really good catch. 2 million barrels of oil. They travel with the Pirate's Handbook, doing what's just and fair. Taxing the robber barons and taking their rightful share. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a Jolly Roger to you. Well, there are those who don't like pirates, but I think they're just great. I only wish that I could shake their hands and say, good job, mate. I only wish that I could join them on the seas, keep those tankers at bay. Tax the corporations and give the loot away. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a Jolly Roger to you. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a Jolly Roger to you.
Guy's got to be one of the most consistent songwriters of late. He just continues to just pump out great songs, and he writes constantly. And next I'll play In the Name of God. Now, David sent us the first draft version to the Horn a couple of months ago and let us host it for the world to find for a while. And it's a great song. This is... over at SoundClick, the blurb on the song says, a song for Dr. George Tiller, assassinated May 31st, 2009, read about in The Guardian after arriving on a flight from London. And he wrote it, recorded it straight away, because, you know, time is the essence of, with these things sometimes. But it's a great song. In the Name of God, David Rovix.
I woke up this morning and I turned on the news. It was a Sunday morning. They were sitting in the pews. The doctor's wife was in the choir. She was about to sing. She saw it all in front of her and she heard that awful ring. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. Dr. Tiller had a family, 3 daughters and a son. 2 girls were both doctors who believed in what he'd done. They knew someone had to do something before they leave this world behind. If it wasn't them, then who would serve the cause of womankind? In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. This is not Afghanistan. It's the heartland, USA, where a girl has to wonder if she'll get acid in her face, where they bomb the women's clinics because the preacher told them to, where the man there on the TV told them that's what they should do. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. In the name of God. In the name of God.
And see, Dave doesn't just, you know, limit himself to talking about United States politics or events or things, but he's, you know, he's big on the whole labor fight and civil rights and human rights. And another track here off of this new collection of 21 is Song for the Eureka Stockade. And says here, just a fabulous true story and defining moment of Australian labor history. There were people involved from 23 nations, actually, but 20 is fit better in the chorus. Never trust a songwriter for accuracy of the details. But, you know, a lot of times when he tours, he'll play at, you know, the main venue of a socialist group, or, you know, some sort of labor rights group or union or this or that. You know, he plays, you know, very different venues very often. But, you know, he picks up the stories along the way. And I haven't heard this one myself yet, but I reckon it's great. So, Telling an Australian Story. Mr. Dave Rovix, and Song for the Eureka Stockade.
From every corner of the world, they came from all around. When in 1851, they struck gold upon the ground. Every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was ruled by brutish thugs. Discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The gold was getting scarcer and caps were getting worse. The diggers burned their licenses and vowed to end this curse. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The crown tried to divide them, giving preference to some. The diggers wouldn't have it, they said it's all of us or none. They built a stockade while the redcoats massed nearby, and they heard the miners shouting, "We're ready now to die." The rebel miners waited for whatever lay in store, and on one December morning in 1854, the redcoats attacked the camp. Dozens there would fall amongst these brave gold diggers who'd risen to the call. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The army thought it was over and things would go their way. But when 15,000 miners rallied a month later on the day, the crown conceded everything, all of their demands. They'd won an end to license fees, the right to vote and land. So here's to Joe and Charlie, Waller and the rest. They drew the battle lines and put crown rule to the test. The diggers may have lost the battle, but they quickly won the day. And those shots fired in Victoria were heard 10,000 miles away. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the southern sun.
Awesome. Awesome. Love it, David. You just continually put out just wonderful material, my friend. We'll play a little bit more from this when we come back and head out to the top of the hour break. But first, we must play the song that must always be played on this program. And we'll use this to play out the end of the hour. So with this, as we do every week here on Foxed Up, because I think the message is so important. Michael Franti and Spearhead and Stay Human, and we'll see you on the other side. Well, that's totally not the right song. It's the right album. We'll fix this. Because we have to play the right one. Now, why are you not in there? Oops. Hey. Try this. This might work better. We'll be back after this.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, a rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow, bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard. But full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a man gone to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Morning, morning. Because the streets are alive. With the sound of boom bop, can I hear it once again? Boom bop, tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive. With the sound of boom bop, can I hear it once again? Boom bop, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and your underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim and not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system to legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bop. Can I hear it once again? Boom bop, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bop, but can I hear it once again? Boom bop, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment. In time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken.
nor shot, but guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas, steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We should be able to deliver bottled hot water to dehydrated babies.
What the hell is that shit?
Two down, one to go. It's your third hour of All Foxed Up with John Fox. You can reach the show at 877-443-2366. Let's get back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. It's the final hour of the program, and I made him do it. I know he's probably never going to forgive me for it, but I made him do it. Since we can't seem to get the regular phone system running, we have David from Maine via Skype. How are you, man?
You know, just hanging out, man.
Well, you finally get... Okay.
I got to tell you about this, man. I mean...
You've been busting about this for a couple of weeks, wanting to talk to me about this very important musical thing. What's up?
Yeah, this is history, man. What you're about to hear and what everyone is about to hear is a story that you can't make up. It exists in a temporal space that will never exist again. And I believe there is something heavily ordained about this moment, what you're about to hear right now. And it's an amazing story. And God bless the people who discovered this. It's important. My advice is just play the song, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay. Well, should I even say what it is, or just play it?
You know what? Just play it, and then we'll talk about the circumstances about it.
Okay. All right. Here we go. The mystery track. Well, I'm digging the hell out of that. That's just you know, lighting up a room, banding a room sounded. I like that.
John, you're listening to a important sonic document. This is the missing link of punk history, what you're listening to. This band influenced Bad Brains, and a lot of people thought they were lost in history. But what makes it more amazing, this is the fact that makes it more amazing. It's pre-Fishbone, pre-Bad Brains, and I'm saying that for a reason, because this is a black punk band from Detroit. In 1974, John.
You send me this YouTube page, and the blurb is in Spanish, and I'm sitting there trying to so I can figure out. And I did see Detroit 74, and it did sound like it, you know, something of a bit of a throwback. So, am I right? Is the band called Death?
Yes, and that's the most amazing thing about it. During the time in Detroit in 1974, and it's still like this maybe, but not as much as it was back then, if you were a black band in Detroit, you had to either be playing Ohio Players,
yeah,
Isley Brothers, all the Motown, but for some reason, and this is the most amazing thing about it, John, these guys are all brothers, and they're age 17 from 21, and these were the demos that they cut for Death.
Wow.
And here's the amazing thing about it. The band really did not catch on in Detroit. It didn't catch on pretty much anywhere because nobody really wanted to take a chance on this band, and they had to fund their own demos. Now, here's the amazing story about it. Cut to many years later, and the son of one of the band members is listening to one of his dad's other bands, and is listening to an old record of Death, an old single 45, a rare 45 that they had ripped on MP3. And he calls him up and he says, "Dad, they're playing your band and they're really liking it," because he's playing it in a club for like some kids. And he says, "Oh, my band Lamb Chop?" And he's like, "No, Death." And there's silence on the end. Now here's the amazing thing about it. The brother who was dying of cancer at the time, I think his name is David Hackney or something to that effect, he said to his older brother, he said, "You know, when I'm long and gone, they are going to come looking for these tapes. I want you to hold on to all my masters." He goes, "I don't know how they're going to discover it." But he goes, "Trust me, I have this vision, and they will." And what happened is the words of legend, is the words of history. This is how it works, and sometimes this is how it works. And what happened is Drag City got interested. They tracked down the demos, they remastered them, and they released them last year. And people have been, I mean, this is something that is not supposed to exist. I don't think people understand that. You're not supposed to have something that's pre-Bad Brains and your black band in Detroit that was this punk influenced and was able to record and exist in a space of time of, I don't know how many years they were together, probably three or two, very, very short time. And when you consider their ages, it's amazing, John.
Well,
it's amazing.
You mention about the time, and if you're a black musician at the time, there were certain pigeonholes that you had to play in, and we've talked about Mother's Finest before, which they were just an absolute precursor to all the big production, what was called, you know, like hairband kind of metal in the 80s and 90s. But they were an amazing band that seemed to not quite get the look in because, you know, black people weren't supposed to play that stuff.
Well, you know, the great story behind this is Death actually decided to go. They got a meeting with Clive Davis somehow.
Really?
So they go in Clive Davis's. Clive Davis's meeting at business room, and they say his office, and he says, "You know, guys, I really love your stuff. I think it's really great." And da 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 da. He goes, "But the name Death, this is never gonna fly. You're gonna have to change it." And the leader of the band, David Hackney goes, mother effer, we're not changing anything. That's the concept. And pretty much he committed, his band committed suicide right there. They knew it from then on. And death was not, like I said, death was supposed to be buried. But, you know,
hey.
I think this is where the pun comes, Don. I think we know that sometimes there is life after death.
Absolutely. Well, I think, I don't know, I'm getting this sense that there's a bit of a musical alignment getting ready to happen. And it just could be me completely lost in the idea that there's an Alice in Chains record coming out, which I've been going mad about for about a week now. I couldn't pay attention the whole lead up of it. I was so skeptical. I said I have to wait until it's almost out before I get too curious. But I don't know. I'm seeing things like, you know, very possibly the best Pearl Jam record in a long time, that they're like, I don't know, are we just hitting on that 20 years past that era that it's going through that natural recycle, or, you know, are we finally going to see the backlash to the shit of the last decade finally come through?
Well, I'll tell you something that I find interesting is that every year, I believe that, and I know this because a lot of people are very good record reviewers. I believe the fact that we've always had classic records during the time of a downturn, but it's always been on an independent tip, and you always have to search for it. It would be interesting to see a mainstream band break out, but what would they sound like? And would the new rock influence overtake it? In the, you know, how people master records now.
Yeah. It
works.
Oh yeah. In fact, because I was hunting around, you know, wanting to see kind of what the buzz was about this. About this Chains record, and it's the cover story at Mix Magazine this month, and the guy who's done the last three Foo Fighters records did this record, and he said, you know, he almost turned it down at first because he thought he was too big of a fan and was like kind of afraid to touch it, and he came down to the idea that from his angle, he wanted to make the album that never really came after Dirt. Not that last self-titled thing, because I really do think that was a band in the midst of chaos and they got out what they could. But, like, I listen to these first two tracks and it's kind of like, it feels like 3 years past Dirt. Like, there's almost like all the loop-based production, which, mm-hmm. you know, writing has become very loop-based because of the technology. People can create things, repeat them to give them a base, and then that's gone from being a tool to create the song form to actually becoming the structure for the song form by the time you go and record it. Bands do this all the time, you know, and, you know, not even techno-based bands, but even rock bands do this. They go and assemble and compose on, you know, their Pro Tools or whatever on their laptops, give it to the band, and half the time they use the demo version that they made on a computer with a machine click going on as the backing track for them to track the real version, and suddenly that loopage actually becomes ingrained in the final version, even if it's not used. And I get the impression that this record, what I've heard off the new Pearl Jam is, you know, when it came to recording it, there's none of the technology was there. It's like tape machine, band, play. And let it be what they always did, which is, these kind of bands always did, which was get in a room. The technology isn't driving the actual production process, which I think it tends to do now, like you're saying, with the mastering and the overmastering that happens. And I don't know, I get the sense that we might be getting a bit of a throwback of like, just go in a room, fuck off all the technology and trying to get it perfect, get a vibe. Make a vibe. And what you've, you know, this death track, there's a vibe in that room that I really think is lost today. You know, like I even played that Carnival track a couple weeks ago, which I really, really like. But I guarantee you that thing's been all mapped out in a sequence. I mean, I do it too. I've got all the same toys.
Right.
But it's very different than when you create the entire thing with just four people in a room going by memory saying, okay, we played it this way once. We'll add this thing. Let's try it again. Instead of cut, paste, insert, duplicate that we end up, you know, because music has become a cut and paste exercise in many ways. You can record 12 bars and make a 5-minute song out of it if you want.
Right, and it's also been a test of how many radio rotations you can get instead of a cut and paste exercise for art, which is really confusing after a while because a lot of these people who think they're listening to artistic records will start making their songs in a radio formatted way. Where it sounds really generic if they haven't heard anything else outside of that spectrum.
Exactly. And like that's one of the big complaints that people have had over the most recent Chili Peppers record, that you could tell it was the first album that they did that was recorded with iTunes in mind. All the songs are of a kind of similar length. They're all things that stand up on their own as singles, but don't necessarily create an album, you know. We've had this conversation before. There was a piece about a year ago talking about how the medium actually impacts the product. You know, back in the 70s and whatnot, when we were still on vinyl, the two sides of an album could influence the end product, because people thought about the album and, you know, that whole track flow thing that you painstakingly go through what was going to be the first track and how would the first half of the album play out and flow and all of that. And then went to the CD, and Tool is a band of the CD era where it's this one long, massive, you know, body. And they have no iTunes contract. They refuse because they don't want people getting ripped off 99 cents for 65 seconds of noise, which they get once in a while. You know, but there the CD was an impact on how they looked at creating the records. And now iTunes, with this a la carte ability to buy music, I think has ended up impacting, like I said with the Chili Peppers thing, a band that I have so much respect for, but I think the industry has now gone and actually impacted the way they make music.
You know, I think it's something that has to be... The artists are going to have to restructure this. I don't know if you heard about... Did you hear about the new Smashing Pumpkins record that Billy Corgan's putting together?
He's the only pumpkin left, right?
Right. I don't know what other members he's putting back in the band, but... I guess he's going to release a downloadable 44-song album,
Jesus.
And it's going to be free for the public, and he's going to release one song at a time. I guess he's finishing it up right now. It's called Kaleidoscope and something or other, Teardrops or whatever. And I don't know. I think people are going to have to slowly come out of this artistic hole that they were in before. I think a lot of people were deprived. I think when you look at a band like TV on the Radio, you can slowly start to see it surfacing where a lot of other bands can be creative. But, you know, it's funny because it seems that so many musicians are in this intimidated zone where a lot of times they don't know, it's like they don't have that, a lot of musicians don't have that critical ear around them, so they don't really know if what they're playing is going to be brilliant or good or anything like that, and they're never given a chance to hone in on their craft. And
absolutely.
I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people just why you don't hear the shut up and play your guitar, and you only hear like you only hear like one or two chords, and a lot of times you don't hear solos. I'm telling you, there needs to be that format that needs to come back, where a lot of people, I understand that's happened in the jam band, but if you look into a lot of alternative bands and stuff like that, it's almost like the word solo is a bad name for a lot of these acts coming out. I mean, it's so concise, even when it's alternative, I think it's even radio formatted to a point.
Yeah, the whole turn that brought us, you know, the Pearl Jams and the Nirvanas and whatnot, there was a bit of a, pardon me, you know, kind of buffing against the virtuoso guitar thing that had happened all through the 80s and 90s, which had its benefits, but you ended up having a whole lot of people that could play a hell of a lot of fucking notes, but it didn't mean much. And you end up going full circle the other way. And, you know, a couple tracks that I've heard off the new Pearl Jam, you know, they're a band that never quite threw the guitar solo idea away. And you're hearing kind of that it's not just about, you know, creating a texture in a song, but the, you know, you can actually showcase the fact that you can play. And, you know, and a lot of times it's the branching out there is players that help create what is the telltale noise. You know, like for me, one of the things that makes Alice so undeniable is the vocal sound. And there's that noise that Jerry makes with his guitars that sounds like nobody else. And I think I've always thought he's one of the most underrated, tastiest guitar players in the genre. I've always thought he's been a, you know, really understated guy. Write solos that you can sing after you leave the gig, which is a rare talent. But I'm wondering if, you know, Fishbone, the new lineup, supposedly is doing, like, really well. You mentioned, you know, someone that we talk about a lot here. I keep wondering, is this signs again that, are we going to have this, what I think are from the last generation of when we really had live music running the charts, you know, running what was actually the mainstream, might be coming back a little bit to show the kids today, you know, it's like, you know, we actually did this before we had, you know, MacBooks.
It might be. I don't know if you know this, but, you know, the bassist for Mr. Bungle, he decided to put out a project. His new band is called Mad Love.
Yeah.
And
Roddy Bottom.
Yeah. And Trevor Dunn and that brings up something interesting before I say that is Faith No More is back in touring again this year.
Huh? And,
yeah. They've reunited and they're touring. I don't know if they're still touring now, but they're getting a really impressive reviews. I think Mike Patton's finally realized that the fans have been wanting it for some time. I don't know if they did it because of financial reasons for the other band members to help him out because it is kind of a drought season, or if he did it really just for the sense because he thought it was time. It's hard to tell with Mike Patton because he is kind of like a manic depressive schizophrenic.
yeah, he is a bit of that, and yeah, I mean they're a band that, you know, when they've kind of hung it up a couple times, but you know, again, they are Mike Patton and Roddy and those guys are again like Trent. Their band is not everything that they're about, and they've gotten, you know, their fingers into other things and produce other acts and create other things and are like the early representations of a musical machine in its creation. So, you know, those guys are always out there, you know, whether they're out there as Faith No More or whatever side projects, they're out there, I don't know, still carrying the torch for creating. And I find it amazing, these guys, you know, like Maynard and whatnot that can do these multiple projects and make them all seemingly consistently good.
Yeah, I think, you know, someone like Maynard and someone like Saul Williams and someone like Tom York, I think the big difference from a lot of musicians' standpoints is they're worldly artists. You know, like the Beatles, they're worldly artists too. They've been around the world. A lot of these musicians, they haven't even seen like two streets down.
Right.
Now. And I think that's, you know, I think that's a problem because a lot of musicians are, I think intimidated to explore in other areas. And that's why maybe that's the reason why the format has become so narrow in across the dial for music on the radio. You know, and also we can't forget this. The A&Rs no longer are music related.
Right.
They're all business related.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean that is we're seeing, you know, down the road effects of, you know, when it all became about units. Nothing's music, it's just units and how many you can sell as fast as you can in the shortest period of time. You know, there was an article here talking about how, you know, is Australian Idol dead? And you know, there's a whole bunch of comments in the thread saying, you know, please, you know, it's, you know, can it please be over so we can stop kind of like distracting from people, you know, even young people were commenting saying, you know, we've kind of figured it out. You manufacture a star that goes for 6 months. We throw a whole bunch of money down the television cross-marketing girdler, and we never see anything from either the artist again. I remember I talked to an Australian Idol winner a few years ago, one of the better ones of the winners. Actually, she might have been a runner-up. The runner-ups usually tend to do a bit better, at least here, with the post Idol career. And I was on stage, we were setting up for sound check, and I said something to her to the effect of, I said, so, you know, I said, this whole Idol thing, I said, you feel like you're out there talking about being a singer a whole lot more than you're actually out there being a singer. And I got this really quizzical look for a second. She said, you've just nailed it. I said, you know, you're out there doing what? You're not singing all that much, are you? She's like, no. Yeah, so much for being a show about showcasing singers. They spend all their time out there cross-promoting for the show, for the product, and not actually doing what it is that they, as some young, unfortunately gullible kid, signed up for.
You know, you look across the dial, you look at Nashville, you look at you just look at the country scene in itself. I mean, they encourage people to be completely formatted, generic.
Oh yeah.
And you can tell from you can't tell from songwriter to songwriter because it really is that formatted.
Oh,
you know, you look back into like the 60s and the 70s. I mean, at least the Bakersville sound had class and sophistication.
Hmm.
This sound, you know, this sound, you listen to it, and it really is, it's almost a patronizing and condescending in a way. It's not really being country, it's selling the culture of country. It's such a crappy way.
You're spot on, and like one guy that I think I would probably have a whole lot more time for if he didn't actually actively kind of sell to this is, you know, Australia's Keith Urban has done just huge things in the United States. And he's a really great guitar player. However, he has fully admitted that there was a point where he made the decision to basically sell out and make it in Nashville. And so he pumps out hollow, cheesy radio country, which is basically just really bad rock music. And that makes a fortune when actually he has the ability and the band to do so much more. but it wouldn't be, you know, guaranteed to get on the on with the country formula. And so he plays the formula. It was a great performance a couple years ago with him playing with the John Butler Trio, doing a, one of the John Butler tunes. And it was, it, you know, it was one of those, you know, tear the roof off kind of performances. And I sat there going, why are you you can do this, but you spend 99% of your time doing that other shit. And I know a whole lot of, I know a whole lot of people that know him and really like him. I think he's, you know, he's a really nice guy, regardless of who he's married to or not. He's supposed to be a really nice guy, great to work with, really good to his crew and the band and all that kind of stuff. But he's a really talented guy that consciously sold out to that machine. And is that just a sign of where we're at now, that a guy who actually has the talent, who can write hooky songs, still feels the need? He had to actually make a choice of one or the other. There wasn't even the chance to try and do both.
You know, just to parallel this to something, it's like how we expect our political leaders and our statesmen, or people who we think are statesmen, to lead us in a more positive direction, and it happens every time. We just go right through the blender of homogenic and just blandness. And to me, the bigger issue is the fact that it's like, we need to get out of this machine somehow, and I don't think anyone knows how. And when we do get out, I don't think anyone knows what direction to go in. So now we're at really a really curious time in our history where it concerns all levels, whether it's politics, art, you name it.
Yeah. The art should never be too far from society. It should be telling the story of society, and it doesn't anymore. You have, just like Fox News manufacturing news content by staging events and then reporting them as news, it's the same as the record labels manufacturing an artist, and then in a country like Australia, go and buy 10,000 copies of your own single and hand them out for free, and you've got a number one single in the country.
You know, also, I think the thing, it also has to do with this. I think a big part of it has to do with is that they don't have a place like the Horn to build discussions and conversations. And you know, when you're in a space in a band, when you're with a band, and or when you're in the music industry, there is that tendency to want to be cool, and to be cool, aka to be stupid, to say the right things. It's almost like, you know what? It's almost like musicians are politicians now, to an extent. You look on the TV, you look on the radio. I can almost see them having their own their public service announcements, and in a way, I guess that's what their record commercials are. When you have when someone plays like the 20 seconds of their videos and said, "You can buy this at Target."
I have to kind of go off the subject a little bit.
No problem.
But I, for one, loved Obama's, you know, unofficial comments about Kanye West.
You know what? I think he said something, and he gave himself a real answer, and I think that's good to see. And we need to see that more and more, so people won't be outraged. That's my opinion.
Well, yeah, I also think like that moment with Kanye, I think, was a perfect example on how so much of what is considered mainstream music and these supposedly mainstream artists, that I think they that was an example of actually losing all concept of actually where your place is in the world. Like, you believe your own hype so much, and you believe the machine so much, that you'd actually go out and stomp on someone else's parade. I mean, seriously, you know, I have to say I was sick. I watched that clip like at least a dozen times because I was just amazed. And you know, Beyonce, who I really don't have much time for, it just doesn't do anything for me. But I mean, good on her, you know, her success and whatnot. She seems to write a lot of her material. That's a step up for a lot of her peers. But she looked horrified, man.
Well, you know, the funny thing about the whole the Kanye West thing, I don't know if you caught that when I was talking to Bob about this, about how, Harry Allen's article on Kanye, which I thought was really meaningful, and he spun it a different way. What he did was he decided to go to he saw a reaction, what was happening on Twitter, and what happened after Kanye, that incident, he noticed a increase in the N-word from pretty much everywhere on Twitter. And the crazy thing about it, John, was the fact that they had their government names there. They had their pictures. It's not like on YouTube when someone says the N-word. It was right out there in the open, and they really thought they were this stupid. They thought that if you delete it, then it's gone. And what happened is it was just like you look through every comment, and it was just amazing to see the fact that so many people decided to go in that direction, and they thought it was so acceptable to say it in an open place like that.
So are you saying that during the awards there was racist stuff happening via Twitter that this was a reaction to? Did I just follow that right?
Right. And what I mean is like, for example, one person said, Kanye, this person, he needs to get lynched. That was a tame example. And I mean, we're talking about in the public here, and I guess the thing that makes it a step beyond the surreal is what I was telling Bob, Friday, and I said that what makes it really surreal is the fact that these people are no longer anonymous. They have their government names, they have their pictures next to them. They have what they do. And here's the crazy part about it. I mean, it kept going even hours later, 10 or 15 hours. So imagine how many people are awakening to this reaction that their Twitter, that the people that they follow on Twitter are this stupid, and they would actually just blurt it out and just say whatever it is that they were thinking on their mind, which to me is ridiculous. I mean, we don't have that reaction to someone like I'm trying to think of an example of Liam Gallagher. We don't call him a cracker, do we?
Oh, I do.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Well, I mean, is Liam the lead singer or the guitar player?
Liam is the lead singer.
He's a jackass. Always
right.
Has been. You know, I'm sorry, this is, you know, equal opportunity. You can be a jackass no matter what your skin color is. And that guy could be a jackass and was really full of himself. Very similar to what I think about Kanye West. You know, thinks he's bigger than he is. Believes the hype about him, about himself. And then, you know, just kind of loses all context for dealing with the rest of the world. You know, that's why I was saying, you know, like, especially after, you know, and I can't even remember, I think it might have even been Bill Maher this weekend, kind of nailed this beautifully, you know, and Kanye has to do this the weekend after we have Joe Wilson.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I was telling Bob about the fact that what people didn't realize about the Joe Wilson situation, I kind of had a different take than a lot of the blogs I was reading. And to me, you know, it is kind of baffling because you're thinking, you're sitting here thinking this guy wants a reaction from the left. He wants you to talk about him for hours and hours upon a time, and he wants you to be outraged because it will propel his campaign funds. I mean, if you look, he's almost up to $2 million on his website right
now. Yeah.
And you know, it's a lesson we should learn from, but apparently a lot of us are not learning from still. We need to get away from this. I mean, look what we did. Oh, my God. Look what we did to Sarah Palin. She's the number two woman. She's the number two politician on Facebook, people. Number one is Obama. And if you don't think she's going to run for anything in 2012, you're crazy. And you know what's scary? Here's the scary part. I was telling this to Bob also. I know we're almost running out of time. I was telling Bob that, listen, this is so amazing. This is so crazy. She had a dinner with Sarah Palin, and someone bid up to $50,000 to have dinner with her on eBay.
Yeah, there was a female journalist in the lead for a while there. Did she end up winning it?
I don't know who ended up winning it, because it was a private list of bidders. But if it was released to the public, then maybe that's who did it. But you know, I guess this is my point. Is that everything that we're seeing right now, we are in like this, we're like constantly stuck on the Gotcha TV channel.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unhealthy to a point, because of the fact that we can never really have any discussions about what we really want to talk about. You know, like when Sparky showed us the wireless electricity, you won't see that on the news.
Right. And you know what, I was doing a bit of a tour of, you know, because Obama's out on his media blitz thing this weekend, which I think is one of the smarter things he can do, because when he actually gets out there and talks to people, he can do some convincing. And because he doesn't have, you know, proper support from his own party, he's got to get out there and do it. But he spoke to that very thing, where he was saying how, because he to his credit, in many ways, he wants to stay clean from this whole racism thing. Because the moment he buys into it, the whole thing gets hijacked, right? So he's got to let other people have that conversation. But he talked about how it's the 24-hour news cycle that's ended up, you know, because it's the fight for winning once every 24 hours, we're not having the discussions we need to be having to move forward to actually do anything for anybody. And you know, what is it going to take for us to wake up this part of the population that wants to focus on the 24-hour news cycle distraction shit and actually, you know, keep, you know, ignore the shiny thing and actually stay focused on whatever the issue is at the moment? Because I've been hearing this from a few people. Richard Clark said it last week on Bill Maher's show, where he said, you know, he kind of pulled everybody up. He goes, the healthcare debate, when has healthcare been debated? He goes, I've heard a whole lot of other stuff, but I haven't heard actually anyone discussing the issues of healthcare during what's supposed to be the healthcare debate. And I really think that this is probably one of the fundamental problems that the United States suffers, is consistently never having the conversation that they need to have right now, and then walking away thinking that they've had a conversation on the subject, but actually not talked about it.
You know, before I go, Robert Perry had a great term for this. He said what the progressive and what the left needs is a new media ecology. And I thought that was a pretty smart term to sum up what it is that we need to do for an infrastructure and for a discussion and dialogue. And I'll tell you something that really scared me. Well, it didn't scare me, but it really put me off, was the fact that I was listening to a bit of Chris Wallace and when he was talking about the White House, and then I started realizing things started clicking for me, and he said the White House frequently emails him and tries to tell him what they don't like. And I thought to myself, you're wasting your time with a media sensationalist pundit, and you're actually emailing him when really there are other pressing issues to consider. If you don't want to go on Fox, then don't waste your time with them, because it's more power to them.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with there being someone, you know, some people in the White House monitoring the media and you know, going after people saying, you know, that wasn't honest, this wasn't honest, and we're going to pull you up on it. I think that there's space for that. But I wouldn't have that as being, you know, number one priority as a way of getting the job done. But I do actually think that a consistent effort of holding them to the fire as well, you know, just like we need to hold our politicians via our media and the media to account when they're dishonest. Like this whole thing with Fox News, you know, actually, you know, jeering the crowds on at these Beck things and deny that they're promoting the events is just absolute, just, it's horrible bullshit. It's scary stuff. And that should be the headline in every news outlet in America right now. Fox News proven to be a propaganda arm of the Republican Party. Full stop.
You know, John, before you close out, you should find that clip of Wolf Blitzer on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh, I heard he got his ass handed to him.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. But you know, John, it's I see that you're on 10 minutes. You're pressed for time. We're gonna have to do this again now that I've downloaded Skype.
Now that you got Skype, my phones will get fixed.
Yeah, now that you can.
Exactly. What took you so damn long?
Well, John, I gotta say it's been great talking to you.
Absolutely.
And I hope to talk to you next week. And for everyone else, if you guys want to check out that album, since we're doing a little bit of plugging. It's on Drag City Records. The album's called Death. The title is called For the Whole World to See. And I think you'll really get something out of it if you're into proto-punk type music. And like I said, it's a document. It's historic. It kind of rewrites, in a lot of ways, it does rewrite the history of punk. Because before, and it is poetic, because before... There was that question. There was always that eternal question: was there a black punk band, and did it exist in Detroit? And a lot of people were iffy about it, and if they had any kind of proof of it. And Death is a full steam ahead type of evidence. Sonically.
Well, I'll almost put money on it that Gene's already getting the links added to the show post, to get people to that. I want to listen to some of the rest of it because I've always loved Bad Religion, and so if this is a precursor to Bad Religion, it's gotta be.
Bad Brains.
Sorry, I heard a Bad Religion tune this weekend that I actually hadn't heard before, and it was really good. I guess that's why, you know, The idea of a black punk band, I love it. You know, I love it. And you know, I always thought it was funny the way Fishbone really got this huge white audience.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One last thing before I go, Fishbone declared that this is crazy too. That they actually listened to the 45, the Politician in My Eyes 45 as well, and that's what influenced them to become a band as well.
There you have it. Hey, man, it's really good to talk. It's been way too long, man.
Yeah, it has been. It's amazing what happens when you download Skype.
Right on, man. Thank you very much for everything you bring to the show, and we'll probably talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, later.
All right, man, take care. And as usual, our good friend David from Maine rounding out the show. And yes, Sparky, we will go back to being green next week some. Because I'm hoping next week to have some... reporting on Kevin Rudd is in the States at the moment having some environmental chitty chats with Barack Obama. So I'll be very, very curious. And he actually met with Clinton yesterday. This is all kind of pre-Copenhagen kind of talks, because I think there is an opportunity at Copenhagen. I don't know if we're going to take it or not, but it'll be the first time the United States is actually at the table for an environmental conference of this size. And I think it'll be good. I don't know. We might actually be able to get some might be able to get this, some framework for some global agreement. I don't know if we'll get a global agreement this time. I kind of doubt it, but it is the first time that the United States is at the table. And that fact can't be underestimated. And Gene informs me that he's adding those links for death over at the show post for today, so you can find all that stuff at foxdup.headonradionetwork.com. But we'll get back on the green thing. It was kind of a music day. My voice also isn't totally back to square yet, so I thought I'd cheat a little bit by doing a bit more of a music heavy show today. But it's been good fun. Thanks for being here, folks. We're gonna kind of get close to wrapping it up here. Before I get out of here, don't forget Bob Kincaid kicks off the Horns Week tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Guy James is supposed to return this week, probably on Tuesday. Which is always a good thing. We keep hammering on, and don't forget, hit that PayPal button. Keep us going. And there's still some of the prints left right at the Horn front page, headonradionetwork.com. $75. You can have a signed and numbered one. They're beautiful, and they're going. So please, if you can, dig in, because, without your support, we can't do this thing, and we love doing this thing. So with that, we're going to start getting out of here. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. We couldn't do any of this without Mr. Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal radio. Thanks to Gene, our news ninja. Thanks to ELO and Lottie, the mods in the chat room. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch. And thanks to you guys for being around. As we say here, be good, be green. We'll see you next weekend.
And the science said long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, "You look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do." So I took off my hat and said, "Imagine that. Look me working for you." So I jumped on the fence and I yelled at the house, "Hey, what gives you the right? Put up a fence to keep me out, or to keep Mother Nature in. If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner." Membership card to get inside. Around the plate at the end of it all, I didn't have a penny to pay.